While teaching at an all-black middle school in Atlanta, Myra Levinson realized that her students' individual self-improvement would not necessarily enable them to overcome their historical marginalization. In order to overcome their civic empowerment gap, she says students must learn how to reshape power relationships through public, political, and civic action. Her new book is No Citizen Left Behind. Levinson is an associate professor of education at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. Following 8 years as a teacher in the Atlanta and Boston public schools, Myra Levinson, I welcome you to the roundtable and thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, it's a delight. Give us a sense. I read a little bit about your background, but working at these middle schools, specifically the one in Atlanta, you were left feeling that there was something fundamentally missing from the education that these students were receiving.
Yeah, that's right. I really admired and learned tons from my colleagues about how they were self-consciously educating strong, proud, informed African-American young men and women to, you know, grow up in a society that had many opportunities but also offered many obstacles to them. And at the same time, though, I felt as if we were teaching them how to be successful in the world in which they were living, but not necessarily to reach across to other worlds that they might join. This isn't a problem only for teaching, say, in essentially segregated black school, which is where I was teaching in Atlanta. It's also equally true in, you know, segregated suburban white schools, where also we're not teaching young people how to exit the communities in which they're living. But it really started to disturb me that I wasn't sure that my students would know how to succeed in a world, in a community that had very different cultural markers and very different notions of what constituted common knowledge than their own.
The term is used of a civic empowerment gap. How do you define that? What's the easiest way to define what that is?
We know, it's sort of common knowledge, that people who are better educated, who are wealthier, who speak standard American English without a regional accent, and who have lighter skin, have a lot more civic and political power in this country than those who are poorer, less well-educated, browner-skinned, and, say, speak accented English.
Right.
But for some reason, up until now, we basically have viewed that as being a normal state of affairs. It doesn't bother us. And it should. I mean, it's just totally anti-democratic and illegitimate. And so the civic empowerment gap is a way to get us to recognize that just as we have in the last 20 years come to understand the academic achievement gap as not a problem with individual kids where they're just hard-headedly not learning what we're trying to teach them, but a problem with our schools and with our nation, which is that we are not educating kids appropriately so that they all learn and they're all able to achieve. Similarly, we need to realize that the civic empowerment gap is not about a bunch of individual choices where it just so happens that poor people and people of color are deciding not to get as involved as others, but where there's really a fundamental inequality and anti-democratic patterning in who has civic and political power. And so it's an attempt to reform that and say, you know, we need to do something about this.
You share the anecdote in the book, but you and your colleagues are on the sidelines watching the middle school, your middle school students. These are African-American students, mostly poor students, who are competing in a quiz bowl against a group of white students. And you and your colleagues are on the sideline, and you're burning up.
Yes. So part of the reason I was burning up was because the questions they were being asked were totally
right.
Absurd. So one of the questions was they had to identify Richard Nixon, which is fine, but also John Wayne, Burt Bacharach, Bjorn Borg, and Kurt Cobain. And that was just totally inappropriate for an academic quiz bowl. But on top of that, it was really striking to me when I discovered that none of the 35 kids I had brought to this quiz bowl, all African American, had ever heard of Kurt Cobain. This was a couple of years after he'd committed suicide.
Right.
They had never heard of Nirvana. They had never heard of Smells Like Teen Spirit. They had never heard of grunge. I mean, that was just stunning to me, and it was stunning to the mostly white kids they were competing against. And when I talked to them about it on the bus afterward and explained why the white middle schoolers had thought it was so funny, and I said, well, you know, it's like for you, somebody not knowing who Master P was. They said, oh, Dr. Levinson, everybody knows who Master P is. And I said, yeah, that's how it feels to the, you know, to the Sutton kids about Kurt Cobain. Oh,
right.
who knows who Kurt Cobain is? Everybody knows Master P. And that's when I really came to recognize what different sort of cultural worlds and references we were living in and had.
So you tell another story, and I find this fascinating. And I don't know, this is the kind of thing that would reverberate in my head for years, trying to figure mm-hmm. this one out. But, well, not really, but I just find it telling. So you're in class, and you and the students learn that the World Trade Center and the Pentagon have been attacked on September 11th. So a number of your students start talking about this and say that George Bush was behind this so he could have an excuse to go to war with Iraq. Now, this is not with the benefit of political pundits on television talking about this. This is not after the long debate that happened in the lead up to the Iraq war. This is immediately following the World Trade Center attack. That to me is really telling, isn't it?
Yes, yes. No, I mean, this was literally 3.5-4 hours after the towers fell. They had not talked to any other adult except for maybe their science teacher.
So what do you think led to that opinion and that feeling?
So I think in large part it was their radically different experience of what it means to grow up in the United States and their quite different perspective on what U.S. political leaders are capable of and what they're like. So when their reason that they gave for why George Bush would engineer these attacks to go to war with Iraq was so that he would be able to avenge Saddam Hussein's attempted assassination of his father, of the first President Bush. And they argued that it was perfectly plausible to think that Bush could do something like this because there was all the evidence from the stolen Florida election and so forth, so that we knew that he was a scoundrel. And it's interesting because it incorporates a quite sophisticated political analysis of things that are incontrovertibly true with what I view as quite spontaneous and off-the-cuff conspiracy theorizing of the sort that I view as false. I don't believe that Bush had anything to do with the 9/11 attack.
No.
But the reason that they were able to conceive of that and come up with this is because they essentially viewed American politicians as being perfectly willing to do outrageous, horrific, murderous things in order to advance their own agenda, which is in large part, I think, based on the experiences that they and their communities have had with American politics and government.
It's an incredibly jaded view for a middle schooler.
It is, and at the same time, it's an incredibly informed view.
Absolutely.
And quite passionate. But yes, just horrifically cynical.
Unfortunately, we're just about out of time, but I'm hoping you can tell us in the minute that we have left of how you hope, of where you're optimistic that we can indeed close this gap.
There are so many things that schools can do to close this gap by first offering kids opportunities to have real discussions in classrooms, giving them opportunity to exercise leadership and extracurriculars, student government, and giving them opportunities actually to behave as citizens, do citizenship projects. I talk about a fair number of these examples in No Citizen Left Behind, and there are partner organizations out there ready to help, and kids would love to get engaged to work on problems that they care about in the community. They're ready. We just need to step up to the plate and offer them the opportunity.
I could talk to you for another hour about this. The book is endlessly fascinating, and you're so informed on the subject, and I thank you very much. The book is No Citizen Left Behind. It's published by Harvard University Press. Mayara Levinson, thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. This was great.
A great pleasure. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.